hopefully a lot of people have already heard of you, but for those who may be unfamiliar with you, what would you like them to know about you?
Well, I'm Byron Malott, of course. I was born and raised in Yakutat, Alaska. Southeast is my home. I've spent much time in Ketchikan over the years, both as a business person with Sea Alaska Corporation, the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. I was chair of Sea Alaska Timber Corporation for many years, which was headquartered here in Ketchikan. I've been a commercial fisherman and have come into the Ketchikan port over the years and in a number of vessels. And I've been involved in a range of Alaska nonprofit ventures, including the Alaska Native Brotherhood, the Alaska Federation of Natives. Have just spent a lot of time here in this city, and of course POW and the surrounding area. Alaska's my home, and it's the most exciting place on earth.
And why do you want to be governor?
I want to be governor because, like all of us, we want Alaska to be a better place. We want it to be a better place for our children, for our grandchildren. We want to continue to build a strong economy here in Southeast, having a appropriately funded marine highway system, which is critical to both the social and business of the entire region. When you land at the Ketchikan Airport and you see that huge shipbuilding and ship repair complex just looming on the skyline, it gives you both a sense of the strength of Ketchikan's economy and the need to keep it strong and to not take it for granted. We have a very small timber industry in Southeast compared to and in the Tongass compared to what it has been in the past, but whatever scale that the timber industry in the future might be in Alaska, it is still important, and we need to maintain it. And of course, the Tongass National Forest is one of the most beautiful and precious places, not just in Alaska, but to America and the world, and the right balance in terms of having jobs and employment and a timber industry in Southeast Alaska, along with the ability to recreate, to just enjoy, and to know that we as stewards for our children and all of the world will keep this place special. Commercial fishing is crucially important to Southeast Alaska and to the entire state, and as has been said in recent years, and it's becoming something of a mantra that the Tongass is a salmon forest, it is the place where that industry must have habitat, you know, must have a strong climate, must have the best kind of support and management so that these salmon runs and other fish species are maintained well into the future, strong and capable of sustaining, again, both a recreational and a commercial harvest.
The timber industry was one of the issues I was hoping you would touch on, because that is obviously something that's been historically very important to Ketchikan. What are your ideas about helping it or expanding it? Does it need expanding?
The timber industry has been hugely important to the economy of Southeast Alaska. Ketchikan, over the decades in particular, it still can be a meaningful piece, a meaningful element of a diversified economy in Alaska, again, particularly in Southeast Alaska, which we must have, whether it is 100 million board feet or whether it is something less or something more, it must be scaled to the marketplace. It must be scaled in a way that that allows it to be sustained over a long-term future. It can't be an industry that exists in fits and starts. The infrastructure, the jobs, the expertise that is required to sustain such an industry needs to be there for the longest period of time that we can make that available. Because once it goes away, it is hard to recover. I'm on the board of directors now, of course, of the Sea Alaska Corporation, and we have a lands bill before Congress which would transfer to Sea Alaska the last of its lands under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And we believe that that is crucial to having a sustainable timber industry in Southeast alongside the U.S. Forest Service. The state has a role to play. And I think that if we work hard at it, if we work at it together, if we look to the long-term future and are smart about what the marketplace for timber is, and work hard, as I said, with the U.S. Forest Service, with the state, I think we can put together a sustainable timber industry for the long-term future.
The Parnell administration has proposed transferring 2 million acres from the Forest Service to the state to create a state-managed forest in the Tongass. Is that realistic?
It hasn't gained much traction in the conversations that I've had with the Forest Service and with others in the timber industry. You know, in the Tongass Forest, one of the things we all know is that every acre is precious to someone. And the notion of the federal government through the U.S. Forest Service transferring directly 2 million acres to the state of Alaska for timber development, which the Forest Service itself has a responsibility for, I think is going to be hard to do. I do believe that the Forest Service should, and the state should cooperate closely. Those few, the ANCSA corporations who are still involved and have a timber base for the long-term future, all of those entities should be cooperating and working closely in order, as I said, to maintain a long-term timber supply. And having one jurisdiction transfer an asset to another, I'm not sure makes a whole lot of sense, but I think everything should be on the table.
A big issue has been and probably will continue to be oil taxes. SB 21 has been put forward as one solution. Do you support that, or do you have a different solution?
I've already said that I will vote for the repeal of Senate Bill 21. We need to have the kind of balance in our oil tax structure that Alaskans support. Simply put, that is not the case now. And I, as governor, would continue to address it as a priority matter. We must have an oil tax structure that allows and creates appropriate incentives for the oil industry to continue to extract known reserves and to hopefully continue exploration in those areas and in a timely manner that allows for the TAPS pipeline, the Trans-Alaska pipeline, to continue to have oil flow to market and, of course, to provide revenue to the state of Alaska. The process in the creation of Senate Bill 21, in my judgment, did not include a broad array of Alaskans. Alaskans were not fully informed of the of how Senate Bill 21 would impact them in their lives and in their jobs. And that's one thing we need to change about government in Alaska, and it's one of the reasons that I'm running, is that every Alaskan should feel he or she has the ability to influence public policy in our state, and they should feel energized to do that. They should feel that they own state government and that it is responsive to their needs and their aspirations, and that no matter where they live in the most remote place, that they have the ability to influence it. And I think Senate Bill 21 shows that was not the case in this instance, and we need to do better.
Would you want to go back to ACEs, or would you still want to... Because a lot of people who opposed Senate Bill 21 still felt that ACEs was not quite right and needed some adjustments.
Well, that circumstance is what has brought us to the point we find ourselves with, instantly upon the passage of Senate Bill 21, a repeal effort collecting over 50,000 signatures, people on both sides feeling either very strongly or even passionately about it. And that's not good public policy. It's not good for the oil industry. It's not good for the state of Alaska. And it doesn't give us the kind of certainty and durability in oil tax policy that Alaska needs and that the oil industry needs. ACEs was considered by many as too aggressive in terms of state policy. Many people feel that Senate Bill 21 went too far in the other direction. We need to find a balance. And recognizing that if and when Senate Bill 21 is repealed, that ACES becomes the default legislation, and recognizing that it too needs significant work, I would begin immediately to sit down with the industry and the legislature, and in the most timely manner, as a top priority, work to get the balance right.
And on a somewhat related note, how about developing Alaska's natural gas industry?
There are a number of proposals, even projects underway, none of which have withstood and been measured by the marketplace at this point. How we bring gas to market in the world market, or how we bring gas to other places in the state to meet our own energy and transportation and heating and electrical needs, are still very much in play. And as governor, I obviously would be aware, knowledgeable that our gas future is important to the state. Again, it would have to be a priority because it is closely connected to what we do with our oil, whether it's reinjected, how and when it is brought to market. We would need to continue to work every day and take a hard look at what is the best prospect and what are the best opportunities for the state of Alaska.
Well, one thing that I've been interested with other candidates is if SB 21 survives the referendum and a challenger is elected to the executive, how do you approach your goals at that point as far as oil tax legislation? Do you maintain SB 21 because it's been approved by the voters, or do you work to implement your own system? How do you approach a situation?
If Senate Bill 21 is survives the repeal vote. Mm-hmm. It becomes, or it already is, the law of the state, and I would work vigorously to implement it. And I would also continue to sit down with the oil industry, with the business community that is so dependent upon the oil industry, and see where we continue to need to strengthen, to modify SB 21 in order to make it durable and sustainable over the long term. We need to find the right balance, and I would continue to work at that. I would not do anything to jeopardize the strong industry relationship that the oil industry has with the state of Alaska. Would work hard to sustain those businesses and those industries that rely on the oil industry. And I would look at all of that in the context of the state of Alaska's interest to continue to ensure that, again, the right balance is maintained. I would do it in a way that we would continue to have conversations, that we would include all of Alaska's institutions that are affected by both the revenue flow and the consequences of oil taxes in our state, recognizing that we have to get it right. It's 80%+ of the state's revenues. It needs to be durable. It needs to be sustainable, and I would continue to work at it.
Coming back a little closer to an issue that's a little closer to home, the Alaska Marine Highway fleet is aging, and while there are plans to replace some of them, a lot of the ships are still, you know, need help. Do you have any ideas for funding the Alaska Marine Highway system and helping out with the fleet there?
You know, as a young college freshman, I remember going down to the Seattle waterfront when the Malaspina was a brand new ship. And to me, it symbolized the future of our state. It was brand new. The state was brand new. And so I would drive down just to see it in port and to see it steam out into Elliott Bay on its way to Alaska. So the ferry system, the marine highway system, is a very special place in my heart. It's critical to every aspect of our lives in southeast Alaska. It needs to be maintained. It needs to be strengthened. It needs new construction. It needs to be a vital part of what makes Alaska unique. Now, we also recognize that Alaska's oil revenues are declining. We're dealing with a $2 billion shortfall in revenues looking at the next fiscal year. The governor has proposed a budget that is significantly reduced from prior years. It seems likely that continuing hard choices in the Alaska fiscal decision-making are going to continue to be necessary, but to me, the Alaska Marine Highway would always be a priority that could not be shortchanged and must be maintained and sustained in order to have the strongest economic and infrastructure and social system that can be maintained in southeast Alaska and the rest of the system throughout the state.
And would you also try to plan projects so that the shipyard here in Ketchikan would be able to bid on them?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the ability of local enterprise, Alaska-based enterprise, Alaska-owned enterprise, that provides jobs, that strengthens the economy of our community, our communities and our region just have to be a high priority. Diversifying Alaska's economy just has to be one of the highest priorities for the state of Alaska as we look to our future. We have, as we've discussed, a declining oil revenue base. Every effort must be given to strengthening and diversifying our economy, and to build upon what is already in place is obviously very important and should be a priority. Ketchikan has that incredible facility. It should be something we sustain over time.
The Bridge to Nowhere has always been, well, not always, but recently has been a fun thing for people to discuss down here. But, you know, the funds appropriated by Congress were more than $200 million when they were appropriated. Now are in the neighborhood of $90 million sits left of those funds as they've been taken for other projects in the state. On the table right now is an enhanced ferry service or a bridge in a few different manifestations. Where do you stand on that project, and would you act on it should you be elected?
You're talking about the bridge and the transportation system between Ketchikan and its airport.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. $90 million, and I don't know the numbers. I haven't looked at it recently. If the bridge at the time that it was appropriated when Don Young was chair of the House Transportation Committee was in the just under $300 million, as I recall, obviously it would be a much, or at least some factor higher in terms of cost today. The question would be, you know, where does it place in the statewide rankings of important projects. I don't have any real knowledge there. Many communities do have a water transportation system connecting them to vital parts of their community. Just my intuitive sense would be, obviously, in the short term, you can't wait. You need to continue to build the kind of local transportation infrastructure that meets the needs of the airport traffic, that meets the needs of the community. And I would be committed at the state level to being supportive of and to give the appropriate priority to that kind of a system. A bridge at the cost levels that are, intuitively out there would be a huge allocation of state and federal highway dollars, and I think we would just have to continue to look at that in the array of all of those that have to be met throughout the state.
Sounds like you're leaning toward ferries.
Well, all I'm saying is that we shouldn't not meet the ongoing needs at the highest level possible while looking at other options, particularly the kind of very expensive option that a bridge would be.
I've got a question about the borough's decision to move forward with a lawsuit against the state concerning education funding. How closely have you been following that story?
I haven't been following that story specifically. I've read the news articles. I've read also, for example, that in the past several years, Anchorage has laid off over 600 employees, that it is expected to do more cost-cutting, including layoffs during the coming year and years. I think much of that is cutting off our nose despite our face. In my administration, education would be the highest priority, that we need to fund the Alaska educational system from very early childhood through our university system as a very high, to me, the highest priority in state spending, mm-hmm. because it is investment, the fundamental investment in our future. The education of our children, the creation of opportunity for them, giving them a sense that as they grow in our state, they will have jobs, that they will have the kind of life that for many, many generations Alaskans have enjoyed and to some degree taken for granted. And now we have to work hard in order to sustain it. In the face of declining revenues, significantly declining revenues, I would still maintain the education of our children as our highest priority.
So another issue is almost always power and energy development. In Southeast, we've got the rain, but developing hydroelectric facilities is extremely expensive. What are your thoughts on that issue?
Well, reducing the cost of living in Alaska should be a constant priority, which requires us to look at things, again, that we've already discussed here, our transportation infrastructure, the need to diversify our economy across the state, the need to create priorities in where we place precious dollars. And after education, reducing the cost of living, strengthening the economy, which are both hugely affected by the cost of energy for home heating, for electricity, for transportation, particularly in Alaska, where we have, other than the urban areas in our state and those fortunate enough to have access to hydro, we're very dependent on diesel, which is the highest energy source, highest priced energy source that's extant anywhere, and we have to reduce our reliance. So the other thing about reducing energy costs for, as I've said, home heating, electricity, and transportation is that you pay for those directly from after-tax dollars, dollars that you could otherwise use to purchase goods and services and put away for college to look to the future for yourself, your family, and your community. And the high cost of energy has turned life for many, many residents of Alaska into a constant struggle. A struggle to meet needs every single day. It creates tension. It is debilitating in terms of being able to think about our collective future, let alone our individual futures. And we have to do something about it. It would be a very high priority of my administration.
How do you stand out from the other declared candidates for governor?
Well, I don't know about standing out. All I can be is who I am. I think many, many Alaskans already know me or know of me, from my involvement with Sea Alaska Corporation. I've been a director of Alaska Air Group, Alaska Airlines, for example. I've been a director of a number of banks here in the state. I've run businesses. I've been the executive director and CEO of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. I've been involved with many philanthropies and nonprofits over the course of my life in the state. I care passionately about Alaska. I believe that we need to have a much stronger, cohesive civil society in Alaska that's built on trust, that's built on respect, that's built on believing that our government can be good for us, that government has a positive role to play, but that requires us to be involved, as residents, as citizens. It requires us to be respectful of one another. It requires us to be open and straightforward. It demands that we work hard to make Alaska a better place for every single person, whether he or she is in Ketchikan or in the small village of Kwikluk. And I take that as a tremendous obligation. Hopefully it will be reflected in my campaign. I will run a positive, transparent, open, and not a negative campaign. I respect the other candidates. I differ certainly from my vision that my vision of Alaska is very different from theirs in meaningful respects. But it's not just what we want to do or the projects that we support or the kind of public policy that we want to see in place, but it's how we go about it so that Alaskans respect decisions because they've had the opportunity to be part of making those decisions where they live, that they know that decisions made that affect them are done in a way that they have the opportunity to have their voice heard, that decisions that affect them, well, the state can't give up its ultimate sovereignty, and no one can have a veto, that in the mix of making public policy that affect every single one of us where we live, that can be a process for good as opposed to a zero-sum game where someone has to win and someone has to lose. That's my philosophy, and I will pursue it in a way that hopefully engages Alaskans who struggle every single day, many, many Alaskans, to build a better place, that we can do this together.
And one issue we haven't touched on, the national issue of healthcare, and you're on record endorsing expanding Medicaid for Alaska. Can you address that a little bit?
It would seem clear to me that the state of Alaska accepting the Medicaid expansion, which would impact positively so many thousands of Alaskans, would bring huge amounts of money into our healthcare system to meet needs, the significant majority of which funds would come from the federal government, would be something that we would analyze carefully and that ultimately we would accept. Because to me, from a very young age, I've always believed that healthcare should be available to every single citizen of our country as a public responsibility and as a private responsibility. The Affordable Health Care Act is a partnership between the private and governmental sectors. Certainly, it is huge. It is costly. It will result in much, much change over the years, both to our health system and to the very act itself. In many areas, it seems we have to hold our nose right now because it really isn't coming online in the way that it should, and it will have many glitches. The long-term goal of every citizen having access to affordable health care in a public-private partnership, I think, is worth pursuing through thick and thin.
In an environment like this, relying on more federal funding for anything, even Medicaid, is that worthwhile?
It is absolutely worthwhile. Mm-hmm. For the state of Alaska, for example, to sue the federal government on issues that, number one, it knows it will lose, and number two, forecloses the opportunity to continue to work with the federal government. to look at the relationship with the federal government in the state's clear interest, and to do it in the same way that you would with another business, with another institution. We are part of the federal government. There's no way that we can be divorced from that. The federal government and the way it works and the programs and the services, the defense of our country, affects us every single day. Now, I have many, many personal issues, for example, with the way the federal government operates, particularly in Alaska, in resource management, in the almost stupid impositions that it places on the conduct of our daily lives when we're hunting and fishing and in many, many areas. But we still have to work with the federal government, and we need to do that more vigorously even than we have in the past. My goal would be to make, to the degree that it is possible, working at it every single day, to make the federal government a partner in the future of Alaska as opposed to an adversary. Now, that doesn't mean that you're constantly needing to stand up for the state's interests, but you need to do that in a way where hopefully you can get the best out of the federal government in any circumstance without giving up what is so important to Alaskans, its government, and its future.